Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to tonight's program. Thank you for joining us tonight over here on Coach Menachem Bernfeld on a special Sunday night. It's about 100 degrees over here in New Jersey, and me and Menachem had a long day, so let's get ready. So tonight's shiur, shiur 190, and first of all, shishkoyach to all the people every week for coming on, for posting on the statuses, letting people know about it. Sifas Kaverim, a place to really talk through things. Last week we had a super powerful shiur. Menachem maybe will share some feedback of what happened from the last week's shiur. But Baruch Hashem, we've really broke some barriers last week. It was very, very humbling experience. So tonight, Hashem, we're going to go a little bit deeper. It's actually going to feed off a little bit of what we spoke about also. The big Sifas Kaverim. And if anybody wants to join our WhatsApp chats, you can please WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. And I'll send you to the community chat. Post the community chat on the link here. We're not going to send that out as well as the email. I also want to, if you're watching this video on YouTube, you can click on the like button, the subscribe button. It's like this. We can make a lot of money because if we have more subscribers, we become rich. Me and Malcolm. So please join us. And thank you for the advertising sponsors, the Lakewood Scoop here in Lakewood, Ellie and Ariel from Park Town Central, and Kyle Kaufman from JCN. Next week, June 30th, we're going to have a very interesting program. Kind of mean like this. We're going to have a share with a young guy named Yehuda Abikassis, who lives in Florida. He's a pretty funny guy. We had a great conversation with him. And we're going to be talking about healing through humor. Therapy meets laughter. Improv healing. Can comedy mix with therapy heal deep wounds and trauma? So it's an interesting topic, and we're going to talk about it. It should be a little entertaining as well. So please join us next week. And tonight's share is share 190. And we appreciate you coming here. And we're going to turn for our gematria for 190 to the CEO of Coach Menachem Bernfeld, the Rebbe Neir Fried. Zog the gematria.
Zoom share number 190, changing the dance in marriage, an empowering approach based on Torah and parts psychology. Our goal is to find kindness and grace in our marriages, which leads us up to tonight's gematria. 190 is gematria emtzachein, to find grace.
Very nice.
Beautiful. Okay, so we're going to start off tonight's year with our host, Coach Menachem Bernfeld, to tell us why we're all here tonight. On Sunday, it's already 9:35 at night. Why are we gathered here tonight, Coach Menachem?
Yeah, welcome everyone to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem Baruch Hashem, with a lot of Siyata Deshmaya. We're doing share number 190. And the feedback is still coming in from last week. Last week was a little different. We had people come on the program, talk about their story, basically stories that we couldn't believe. And the feedback, people reached out to everyone that got on. We had four people, and Baruch Hashem, we actually had a group in person over here in Lakewood started already. And again, whoever wants to reach out in your neighborhood, reach out to organizations, you can reach out to me. But the idea is you don't have to do it by yourself. You don't have to be on the journey alone. You know, you could be in therapy, do what you have to do, but get that support. Support is so important no matter where you are. So that's the idea of last week. So reach out. Tonight, we're continuing. Tonight we're trying to figure out a little bit our marriage. Okay, we had many programs of marriage and many ideas that came up, different speakers, how to fix marriage, how to enhance your marriage, try to figure out what's going on.
Kol HaLashon.
Different ideas, date nights, getting babysitters, having an account special for that. We did EFT, you know, emotional focus therapy. Learning how to listen, to understand the deeper what's going on. But tonight we'll get a different perspective. I believe in Mitch Shem, with Chaim Moshe Steinmetz, the way he deals with the men that come into his room. How to deal with the one side of the marriage to understand what's going on. But if you think about it, marriage is really like any part of growth, wherever you are. If you're not growing, then you're probably going backwards. If you're not consciously thinking, how can I become better? How can I make this better? What can I do? If you put it asleep, probably start take for granted things and you don't appreciate what's going on. And then before you turn around, you're just full of resentment, and you wonder, what's going on with my marriage? So it is important, no matter where you are in your marriage. I know a lot of people who gave up already, you know, this is it, I'm not going to talk about it, I'll just take care of myself, and that's that. But to take a moment, take a deep breath, and maybe you'll get some fresh air, new ideas to understand what's going on. So, in Mitzvah, we shall have a lot of Siyata Rishmaya, Reb Chaim Moshe. It's a big supposed to have you on, and you'll tell us a little bit about what's going on in your office. Thank you.
Chosh Menachem, beautiful opening. Okay, let's get into it. Tonight's shiur is titled, Changing the Dance in Marriage, an Empowering Approach Based on Torah and Parts Psychology. Like Menachem said, we've had quite a bit of programs on marriage. Baruch Hashem, a lot of them have been very powerful, and hopefully tonight will be one of them. It's another angle, and it's very important. And we'll all learn together. I'm going to read Reb Chaim Moshe Steinmetz's bio, and we'll get into it. Chaim Moshe Steinmetz is a psychotherapist specializing in men's stress, men's experiences, stress, trauma, anxiety, mood issues, anger issues, marital and relationship issues, shame, inadequacy, emptiness, compulsion, addiction, differently than a woman. They benefit most from the approach that speaks to their own worldviews and emotional realities. To meet each other's clients' unique needs, Chaim has developed a deep, thorough, and broad knowledge across a diverse set of disciplines to provide his clients with the most cutting edge and efficient tools for change. Some of these modalities include TIST, EMDR, EFT, energy psychology, breath work, and more. Chaim sees clients both in person and online through telehealth, Zoom. And, I happen to have the schuss to spend a week with Chaim. I happen to have been in Cleveland and we shabrang a lot. We had a great time and I was very happy that he's coming on. So Chaim, the floor is yours. Open it up.
Thank you, Ashi. Yeah, it was a lot of fun when you were here. I feel like I know you now for like 10 years. So there's four main points that I want to focus on, and each one is really has to be addressed very in depth, but I don't want to go on and on over here. So I'm going to go through all four bikits are in the introduction, and then we'll flush it out in the questions, Mr. Chen. But I told you before, Coach Menachem, if I'm going too fast, just please interrupt me and make sure that it's coming out clearly. So before we get to marriage, the first thing we need to focus on is ourselves. The way the brain works, people who have been to therapy, especially if they've been to IFS, this is not IFS therapy, but if you've been to therapy, you might be familiar with the concept of parts. So most people, if they haven't been to therapy, perceive themselves to be I. I'm Chaim, you're Coach Menachem, you're Ashi, right? But the truth is psychologically, but it's even not only from a psychological perspective, even neurologically, like you could see this on a brain scan and an MRI. The way the brain works, it's divided. So there's many different parts, but for simplicity, we're going to call it child and adult because there's a lot going on in both ends. We're not going to cover all of it, but we'll just simplify it and call adult and child part of the brain. This is the way I explain to my clients because it's very, very simple. People get very in-depth in it, but it's really a very simple concept. So right now, I'm on the Coach Menachem Shear, and I'm an adult. I'm a therapist. But I have kids at home. When I play with my kids, I go, right? That's not this guy. It's not the guy he's talking to right now. It's, you know, that's a whole different part of the brain, part of the personality. So that's the child part of the brain. What does it mean, the child part of the brain? What does it mean, the adult part of the brain? But it's very obvious to anybody who, you know, if you take a second to look at what goes on in your life, we all have many different facets to our personality. And some of them can seem contradictory. They clash with each other. But the basic point is that there's two parts of the brain. There's the child part of the brain. And there's the adult part of the brain. Now, the child part of the brain, like I was just saying, is comprised of the many different stages that you've been through. So when you were two, you were a two-year-old, and you saw the world a certain way. You thought a certain way. You felt a certain way. And then you became three. Then you became four, and so on. Now, whatever stage you were at, that perspective, the emotions, the perspective, the way you saw reality is wired into the brain. And when you get older, you don't get rid of that. You just add another layer. And as you get older and older, you're having more layers and more layers. And when you're an adult, finally you develop the adult part of the brain. Now, this is, it's very important that this is not really, this is not a muscle. This is a very real neurological reality. And the child and adult parts of the personality are really based in two different parts of the brain. So when you're born, there's a lot of different parts of the brain, but the parts of the, for, at least for our conversation, there's a part of the brain that's called the limbic system. A lot of different functions there. But the child part of the brain really resides in the limbic system of the brain. The adult that we're going to discuss is in the prefrontal cortex. Prefrontal cortex is actually not developed until you're about 25. It's there when you're born, but it doesn't develop fully. It's not fully matured until you're 25. So this concept of different parts of us is actually, if you take an MRI scan, then you can see this is the adult and this is the child in your own brain. Now, what is the child and what does the adult look like? So let's start with the adult. So the adult actually sounds a lot like the way we think of adults. So the adult is logical, thinks in a logical way, organized. You can give someone directions step by step by step and they'll follow it. That's all coming from the adult part of the brain. Another part of the adult is goals. Kids don't have goals. Adults have goals. So where am I headed with my life? Planning for retirement. But also spiritual goals, values. All these things are something which is only in the adult part of the brain. There's a lot of different qualities that the adult has that the child doesn't, and vice versa. But another one is being able to see the big picture of something. So if let's say your kid, if somebody has kids and one kid punches the other kid, so the other kid's going to think, my brother's is a mushless. Yell and scream, he's the worst brother ever, right? Yesterday, that brother was his best friend. Tomorrow will be his best friend. But right now, he punched him in the nose, so now he's the absolute biggest Russia in the whole world. That's because the kid part of the brain cannot see outside of this moment and can also only see black and white. Either you're good or you're bad. So in this moment, he did something bad. The brother did something bad, so now he's bad. Tomorrow he's good. He did something nice, now he's good. So another important part of the adult is the ability to see the big picture. And that's the opposite of the black and white aspect of the child. So the child is black and white and only sees in this moment. And the adult is able to see the bigger picture. Yeah, the kid punched you, but he also does nice things. Right now, you know, it doesn't take away from the problem that happened, but if you're able to see the big picture, it gives a context, right? So that's another function of the adult. Adults also can focus on other people. Kids, for the most part, focus on themselves, unless it feels good to focus on someone else. So that's the adult part of the brain. The child part of the brain has different qualities. Now, these are not negative or positive. This is just what a kid is. And anybody who watches kids or has kids, these are sort of self-evident, but it's very much originating in the child part of the brain. So they're impulse-driven. They're not, adults are driven by logic. Kids are driven by impulse. Whatever impulse arises in the moment, it's very difficult for them to override the impulse and do something different. Like we said before, black and white thinking. So good, bad. Amazing, terrible. That's the only options for a kid. The kid perspective is everything is either this or that. There is no bigger picture. There's no context. There's no nuance. That's another very important part of the child part of the brain. They're very focused on themselves. They don't have the capacity to see outside themselves and see another person and really empathize or even just to think about practical concerns for another person, not necessarily emotional or empathy. Kids are very emotion-based, right? So adults are thinking about their goals. Kids are, how do I feel? Everything's about how I feel. The person A did this, I feel happy. Person did this, I feel sad or I feel angry. And the emotion is what drives all their actions and their motivations. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean a negative thing. It could be that the emotion drives positive things too. If they feel liked, they'll do you tons of favors, right? But if they feel like you don't like them, then they'll, I don't know, fight with you. But the point is that they're very driven by feeling versus emotion. They can't think outside the moment. This moment is all that exists. That's also a mila because they're very mindful. They're very engaged in what they're doing, but they can't think of the consequences. So they're doing something, they're not anticipating that whatever I'm doing now is going to have a problem in 5 minutes or tomorrow. There's a lot of detail in the child adult, but for our purposes, that's all that you need to know. So there's the adult part of the brain and there's the child part of the brain. Now, there's other qualities of the child that we focus more on, like the problematic ones, but kids are very fun loving. They're very spontaneous. They're very, fun loving. They're spontaneous. They're creative. There's a lot of positive, engaging qualities that a child also has. They like to have fun. Adults, if their child, the child part of them likes to have fun, but the more, you know, the more adult someone is, the less you're going to see that side of them in that moment. So there's positive and there's difficult qualities to the child and to the adult. Now, since we have both parts of the child and the adult coming up in different areas of our life, right? So most people, for the most part, at work, they're going to have an adult. Their adult part of them is going to show up because no other way to work. You can't have a kid at work, can't follow directions. If his boss gets on his nerves, he'll just yell and scream, right? So in order to be able to be a functioning person in society, at work, if you go to shul, if you're in the grocery store, you have to be able to utilize the adult part of yourself. Now, there's different areas where the child will come up. So if you want to have fun, you're hanging out with your friends or with your spouse, and you're having fun, you're playing a game, you're having date night, or then you might have the child come out. But the point is that there's many areas for every adult, if they have a prefrontal cortex, or anybody who's alive and not in the trauma ward of a hospital, they have a prefrontal cortex, they have an adult self, and they use it in many areas of their life. Now, that's the adult, that's the first piece, how the mind works, the division between adult and child. Now, if we look at marriage, so let's start with marriage in the United States. Forget about Jewish marriages, but marriage in the United States it's been in a crisis for a very long time. But if you look at the statistics, about 50% of marriages end in divorce. And there's a lot of studies that the people who stay together, it's not like they're madly in love either. So it's not hunky dory in America. The marriage situation is not in good shape at all. Now the question is, why is it like that? So based on this, it's pretty obvious, at least a very big part of the problem. American culture and, or just secular culture in general, all over the world, but especially in America, and it comes out a lot in marriage, it's all about the child part. That's all that matters. Somebody who's doesn't have any greater vision or mission for their marriage, but if they're just, you know, a young American who's getting married, for the most part, they want to fall in love, have romance, meet the person of their dreams who's going to take care of them, meet all their needs, be their life purpose, their all-purpose life solution. So it's a very good fantasy, but it doesn't work. And it's a very simple one. It doesn't work because if we can't make ourselves happy, how is the other person who you're marrying going to be your all-purpose? If you can't make yourself happy, there's no way someone else is going to fill the same thing that you can fill. So there's more to it than that, but a very important piece is that American culture and society is very, very focused on the child part to the exclusion of the adult. Now at work, they have some people, a big part of society, especially if they're big companies, they have a very good work ethic. The adult will show up in other areas of their life. But in marriage, the only thing that's there is the kid. How they feel is the other person make me feel the way I want. Is the other person being there for me? It's about self-gratification, which is not necessarily a negative thing. It's just doomed to fail. So that's a very important reason why marriages are falling apart. There's only a child part. Now, besides that they're very heavily focused on the child, there is nothing else. Because again, the adult is able to go to work and do practical things, but the adult also has another function, we said. The adult is values. The adult has a bigger picture. The adult has goals. So the goals in the marriage is just that you feel good. Now, sometimes, if they're religious, they'll have a bigger goal. Maybe they'll want to raise kids. But that's, lately in American society, a lot of people don't even want to have kids. They don't want to get married. They don't have kids. So, and then even within kids, not necessarily are they, do they want to have kids because it's a life goal for them as much as like they want to have the feeling of being a mother, which is a very different. That's also a child part. That's not necessarily a negative thing because you could have both. You could have the adult perspective of having a child, which we'll get into soon. But there's another one, which is emotional based, which is you want to have the feeling it feels good to be a mother. They find out sometimes, you know, when they get married that it's not all fun and games, like everybody, anybody who has kids knows. So the problem with for the most part, if we're going to go broad, is that American marriages are dominated by child only. If you have child only, you have two kids who are getting married, it's not going to work. It's pretty obvious. So what's the solution? So the solution is going to be to bring the adult in, but that's going to have as many different ways to have the adult. So I want to look at a few points of how Yiddishkeit approaches marriage. Now, it doesn't need to be through a Yiddishkeit perspective. There's many other ways of approaching it from an adult perspective, but everybody here, for the most part, is from, and we already believe these concepts, so it's very relevant to bring out the Jewish concepts, which are very related to the adult part of the brain. So the Jewish reason to get married is more along the lines of the Jewish reason to be alive. And the Jewish reason to be alive is we have a mission and we're here to grow and to work on ourselves. And marriage is a part of that. So that doesn't mean that we don't have feelings. Obviously we do. It doesn't mean we don't have child parts, but that's the goal. The goal of the marriage is to work on yourself and to grow as a human being. Now, marriage is the perfect opportunity because growth, even in nothing to do with marriage, in any area of growth, psychological growth, any type of growth, is overcoming adversity. Adversity doesn't have to be external. It can be internal. So somebody gets you upset. How do you deal with it? It doesn't mean that you give in and do what the other person wants always. It also doesn't mean that you yell and scream. You have to work with whatever's bothering you and then process it and then rise above it. So growth always means that there's something in the way, there's a block that you have to overcome the hurdle. And when you do, then you're growing because then you're getting to another layer of yourself, a higher, more sophisticated, more spiritual, whatever your goal is. But that's what growth means. So one of the basic things of Yiddishkeit is that we're here to work on ourselves and to grow. Marriage is the perfect vehicle for that because you're going to have many, many opportunities to overcome blocks and adversity. Now, many people are a lot of pain because of this, but that's really the way it's built. It's intended to bring up pain and to bring up blocks. And then the point is that you can work through that. Now it's not easy, but if you think that the point of marriage is that you're not going to have any pain, then you're going to have a lot more pain actually, because you're expecting that it's supposed to be this perfect bliss. The other person is there for you 100% all the time, 24 hours a day. And when you're going to be very let down by that. But if your expectation is not that they're going to be perfect, that doesn't mean that there's no place for happiness and joy. Of course there is. There's no other way to have a marriage without it. But that's not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal and the reason is because that's part of your mission. And there's many different aspects of the mission. So one part of it, if you're from, is personal growth. Another part is having children. Not necessarily because it feels good. Sometimes it does. And as all of you know, a lot of times it doesn't. Right? So the mission is to raise the next generation of Shoyim Ritar Mitzvahs. It's very different than feeling good. Now that may feel very good sometimes, and there's a lot of emotional aspects also that feel good, but that's not the point, and that's not the goal. That's a perk along the way, a very nice perk, but it's not the goal. That's very different. So if you approach marriage, from the adult perspective, it's going to look very different because your expectations are very different, and you're going to be less bogged down by all the hurdles, because the point of the marriage is not that you shouldn't have those hurdles. The point is something else. And those things and the hurdles are actually assisting you with getting to where your goal is. Now, there's a very interesting relationship between this and psychology, because we talked about non-Jewish marriage or secular marriage. What they really want, and what everybody really wants, is to be happy. They want to be happy. They want to enjoy life and be happy. Now, the from perspective is not meant to torture you. It may not be the only reason is not to be happy, but one of the big things, the big perks of it, is that it does bring to happiness psychologically. Now, I want to say a quote from Viktor Frankl, who's a very famous psychologist. He went through the Holocaust. the quote brings that well, but this is, it's all over a lot of the, big, famous and effective psychological modalities. The more you chase happiness in any weird area, not just marriage, any area that you chase after being happy, you're going to be miserable. So how do you be happy? So I'm going to read the quote and then we'll talk about it, Drap. This is from Viktor Frankl. It's a very, he's a very, high vocabulary. It's understandable, but it's, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit later. Don't aim at success. The more you aim at it and make it a target, the more you are going to miss it. For success, just like happiness, cannot be pursued. It must ensue as the unintended side effect of one's personal dedication to a course greater than oneself. So I'm going to just say what that means for anybody who didn't hear all the words, or, you know, it's a little bit muddled. But basically what he's saying is success and happiness and many other things as well, the more that's your goal, it does, you cannot achieve it. You chase it, you're always going to be running after, you're never going to be happy. Both success and happiness. The way you achieve both of those is indirectly. So what he's calling a course greater than oneself. So if you're focused on a goal that you have, a value, mission, what he's calling a course greater than oneself. But the point is, it's not about you and how you feel. It's something outside you. If that's what you're focused on, then the byproduct, it's almost a side effect. Then there's a side effect that you're going to be happy. But the more you make that the focus and the goal, you're going to be miserable. So having the adult, what we're calling the adult, which blends both from or ideological values and the goals of the adult with the practical aspect of the adult, is really what leads to happiness as a byproduct. But in any area of psychological healing or psychological work, the only way that anyone's going to ever be happy is when they stop trying to be happy and they focus on something bigger or outside themselves. Now, how does this apply practically? So obviously there's a million different factors. We're not going to get into all of them. I just want to bring the basic concepts and how does it look basically on a practical level. So
just before you continue with the practical, I'm just a little bit of feedback on what you're saying is, for the step number one is to learn about your inner child. Step number one is to understand that piece that many people are not aware of.
So I'm not sure could you clarify the question?
There, you know, we're all adults. We all have goals. We all, you know, we're all talking over here. The adult is talking. Not everyone is aware of that other side, other part of us that's playing a role.
Right.
So you're saying the first step is to be aware of the parts that we have.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And that's something that you do in the therapist's room, or something that you, how do you figure that out?
So that's actually the thing I was about to talk about now, very, very briefly. So there's a lot, you know.
So maybe we'll continue with that with the questions that come up. So, you know, basically overall we got, and Osha, you could put the polls, and then you'll continue with the okay. Implementation.
Let's jump into the polls and we'll get into the implementation part. We'll clarify everything. Okay.
Well, let me say, I want to say one more point. We're not getting into the details, but one more point on this. The basic concept, the details we'll get into questions, but the basic concept is, that the adult has to, in the marriage, the adult has to be if you think of a car, the adult has to be the one driving. The child part, and we'll see how that comes up, has to be in the back seat. In American marriage, there is no adult at all. The kid is driving the bus, driving the car. There is no adult at all. The goal is not to get rid of the kid, and the goal is not to get rid of the adult. The goal is the adult's driving, and that has, you know, in important issues and conversations, the adult has to be the one that's there. You bring your work self home. Now, the child is very important, but it can't be driving. When you let whatever's going on hijack the adult, and then the kid just does what he wants, that's where a very big portion of the problems come. And then we'll get more into detail later.
Okay, let's get into the questions over here. Hold on one second. Malcolm, do you have the questions on your thing?
See?
Oh, here, I got it. Okay, we have two questions, two polls. Just to change where the place is. Okay, everybody answer the question to the best of your ability. And let's get into it. First question. What triggers you the most in marriage? Okay, answer the best of your ability for you. Lack of communication, financial issues, unmet expectations, household responsibilities, or jealousy or trust issues. What's your personal trigger in your marriage? Number two, what brings happiness to marriage? What do you think brings happiness to marriage? Spouse meeting your needs? Make sure to meet your spouse's needs. I guess if you meet your spouse's needs, you feel happy. Spending lots of quality time together. Fear of burdening friends or family. I'm not sure what that is. And the last one, having a bigger picture perspective while addressing your own needs. Those are the three questions. Those are the two questions. And then we'll share with everybody. Now, what's that fourth one? Fear of burdening friends and family. Okay. Let's see somebody vote on it. In 5 more seconds, and then we'll go over it together. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Chaim, here we go. What triggers you the most in marriage? 55% of people feel lack of communication. That's by far the number one answer. So that's what triggers people when they feel the communication is not good between each other. That's what triggers the marriage. 6% financial issues, 24% unmet expectations, 6% household responsibilities, 9% jealousy or trust issues. So I'd say most people here by far feel lack of communication is the biggest problem, and that's probably why we're talking about what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm curious if it's lack of communication or if it's just bad overall. When there's communication, it doesn't work out well or lack. But yeah, the lack of communication or bad communication is going to be the same point because let's say, I don't know if you could do another poll on the spot. I'm curious, how many people, the 55% saying lack of communication, how many of those people have that issue at work? Right? Because most people can't communicate decent. The lack of communication is not really a communication problem. It's a child part jumping in. Children are not the best communicators, right? Are you able to do another poll like that? No, you can't.
You're saying they're emotionally triggered.
Yes. Yes.
Versus at work, they can pretend to be an adult.
What happens when you're triggered? So I'll say briefly what triggered means. Triggered means when something happens, let's say you're anybody, but we're talking about marriage, your spouse says something, let's say critical. And let's say you had a history of being criticized. So that's a sore spot for you. So trigger means it sets off the child. The process of that happening, it turns off the prefrontal cortex. We don't have to get into the details. It's a little fickle boring to get into all the details of that. But the point is, when you get triggered and somebody pushes the sore spot of that kid, the kid jumps out, like, right? Gets a little defensive or whatever. The prefrontal cortex turns off. So the adult is sort of not, the adult's gone. The adult is unavailable. So you're not going to be able to communicate well if you don't have a brain. None of us can communicate well without a brain. Your brain's not working. So the most important thing when you get triggered is not to try to communicate. You don't have a communication issue. You have a triggered issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the middle of a conversation when you're supposed to be an adult conversation, let's talk about money or parenting, whatever it is, and you get really, really triggered because your spouse said something you didn't like, you're not going to try to communicate. You'll try to end the conversation. Maybe you'll say you're triggered depending on if your spouse is open to that concept. But you can figure out a way to, you know, take a brief break. You'll go into your room, smash some windows, vent, and then come back and bring the adult back. But for the most part, lack of communication is really a child part hijacking the conversation.
That's why we have to really clarify tonight what this is part and how it plays out. Okay, number two, what brings happiness in marriage? What do people think? 90% of people feel spouse meeting your needs. 9% feel making sure to meet your spouse's needs. 35% of people spending lots of time together. 36% of people having a bigger picture perspective while also addressing your needs. So you have a nice little split over here. Want to comment anything on that? Oh, the second one?
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm just like, so spouse meeting your needs is 19%. Making,
meeting your spouse needs by far.
So, yeah, this is interesting. So most people are agreeing having a big picture perspective while also addressing, what's the last four words there? It's black on here. Yeah. All right. So everyone's, 36% have the perfect blend.
This is what they think, not that they could do it.
Right.
Okay. So we need to clarify a few things over here. So we basically, we threw out a concept over here of the adult part of us and the child part of us. Let's really get into it. For somebody sent in a question, and that really, I think, could clarify in the question what it means, let people understand what it means, that child part of us, and how it plays out in dynamics. And then we can talk about how to deal with it. Somebody sent in a question. I'm a coil, and my wife is a breadwinner. Thank her. Every time I bring up spending issues and lifestyle, she starts yelling that I shouldn't butt into that part of our life. I have nothing to do with it. I can't even have a conversation about the way we want our kids to look because it always comes back the same screaming and anger. So anytime they have a conversation about money, doesn't make a difference if it's coil, not a coil. Whatever the conversation is about money, one person has a blow up that they want to do a certain way, and they're obviously not having a rational conversation. So how do they deal with that?
Right. So obviously I'm not going to, the specific details over there, you'd have to know a lot more to know exactly. So from the way the question is being asked, it sounds like the wife is definitely having a child part pop up, right? But this happens very often, and I see it with a lot of my clients. You don't see what this guy's end is, but for all, the way he's asking is probably also a child part. So if he's going to come in and say, like, you don't listen to me at the money, right? So then that's going to trigger her, and then they're both going to be triggering each other, and they're both going to be smashing windows. So, again, it very much depends on the details, but the child part of the wife is coming out. Probably the child part of the husband's coming out when he asks. So the way to broach it would be the same principle. It needs to be from the adult. From the adult, there's no accusation. So, let's focus on how do you know when it's the child and when it's the adult there? Sometimes it's hard.
Let's not focus on the question. Even let's globalize it. You have two people
well,
married.
Exactly.
People that are married. We're having a very normal conversation, a logical adult conversation about spending. Let's use spending as the example for this one. And you see one of them, right? Let's say there are two adults now, and all of a sudden one of them gets very irrational and childlike, whether it's screaming, yelling, shutting down, which is a childlike symptom, right? Let's call it that way. What happened there? So first of all, the person who didn't turn into the child, they both turned into children. We have a big problem. I don't think right now that's...
Well, that's usually what happens, actually. Usually one person gets triggered. And then the other person gets triggered from the trigger. And then, and then it's party. Not really party.
Let's go first with the thing that the guy is not triggered and one person is still the adult and they see the other spouse acting childish, whatever, childish slash angry slash screaming slash yelling, but there's nobody to talk to. So what happened? Explain what happened. What happened with this dynamic?
So what happened is if we're assuming the husband wasn't, the husband said it from an adult place.
They both were in adult place.
Well, the wife, from the response, the wife was.
The wife was an adult place. And then when she said something.
Right. So when he brought, when the
husband was very, I'm using the word childish. We have to understand childish doesn't mean they're acting giggling on the floor. That means they're acting not intelligently smart. It could be screaming, it could be yelling, it could be shut down. Those are all, we're calling that all child.
They're coming from an emotional part of the brain and black and white thinking and not seeing the big picture. That's what you're saying.
Right.
So what happened is the husband bringing up a topic for whatever reason, for the wife.
For men, so we're choosing the men, just to clarify. Yeah.
Well, that's what the question was, right?
Right.
Yeah. If we're assuming the man, the husband asked the question from the adult, but for whatever reason, something the way he said, or the tone, whatever, triggered the wife. Now, what triggered her? It's impossible to know without all the details, but it could be something about money. If money is in general, let's say she grew up and money was a hot topic, then that might have triggered her because she felt, afraid of not having enough money, that could be something like that. Or it could be criticism. If the way the husband's bringing it up is something, is critical about the way the wife is dealing with it, that definitely could be what the trigger was. Criticism is a very big one for most people. So especially if the person has a history of criticism, if they were bullied, there's a lot of different things in people's past, plus their just genetic, their genetic profile, their tendency, their natural tendency, that they can be very easily triggered to criticism. Most people are sensitive to criticism. So if anything about what the way the husband brought it up was overtly or even not overtly critical, especially in the trigger, he could have done nothing that was objectively upsetting, but because of her personal history, it triggered the kid and shut down the prefrontal cortex.
Now he sees his wife is completely agitated, and what should be his first mindset without getting, you know, obviously we don't have to shut down, we don't start fighting with her, and get re-triggered and then escalated. So what would be the adult?
But the first thing that he has to do is make sure that he stays in his adult, because if he goes out of his, if he leaves his adult state, so that, and he gets triggered, then it's going to escalate. So number one, and that's not easy. Because if the wife is getting very upset at him, that could trigger him. That would trigger most people. She's yelling and screaming at him, and he thought he didn't do anything, so that's going to trigger him. Number one, he has to stay in his adult. Now, if she's triggered, he can't have the conversation. Because he's not going to get anywhere, because he's talking to the child part. So the conversation has to wait until a later time. Well, end the conversation. When she's calm, he'll bring it up. And again, we're not going to get into all the details how he's going to bring that up, because that's not the, beyond the scope of today. We're not going to get into, you know, all the details of it. But when she's in her adult is the only time that he can bring it up. He can bring up the conversation. I want to talk about money, but I saw that something I said must have been upsetting. Can you tell me what it is? Be open to hearing what he said or what he did that was a problem, and then they can have it again. But he can't address it then. That's the most important thing that most people struggle with. Because in the heat of the conversation, they want to resolve it, and it's unresolvable. At that moment, it's completely unresolvable. His wife's brain is off at that moment. It'll come back in a couple minutes, but now it's off.
And some people have to sometimes deal with certain issues in therapy. They can't. It's a very sensitive topic to one person. Sometimes they don't have that opportunity, even when she's calm.
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot of, yeah, if that conversation can't be had, so that doesn't necessarily mean somebody's therapy. It depends on what the issue is. Part of being an adult is, okay, so if it's not a critically important topic, then maybe it can't be addressed. Now, if it's an important topic, then it does need to be addressed. But not every single topic needs to be addressed.
Until what age would you call a child? I'm just thinking, you know, I know tonight is not about chinuch, but every time we talk to our 12-year-old, 13-year-old, do they hear us?
So it's not black and white, right? So the prefrontal cortex is developing. It's not, doesn't turn on at 25. It's there when we're born. It's just not fully formed and not fully matured. So there's an ebb and flow. Like a 2-year-old is going to have less than a 7-year-old. A 7-year-old is going to have less than a 14-year-old, right? A teenager is going to have less than a 20-year-old. But there is no one number that makes a child a child. I guess once someone's 25, they're fully developed as an adult. But that doesn't mean that when you talk to them, you're talking to their adult. Because if they're triggered, there's both. Which part of the brain is hearing you is dependent on which part of the brain is activated at the moment. But by age 25, you got the whole person. Now that doesn't mean that, and each part develops because can still develop, right? The adult part of us is gaining wisdom and knowledge and know-how throughout life. But in terms of the brain development, that's what I mean. All the parts of the brain that are needed are there by age 25.
Well, let's go back to two people dating, and they're having a great time. So I'm wondering, is that the child or the adult?
Probably the child.
She's saying the two kids are going out and they're having a great time and they love each other. And then they want to get married. Where's the adult?
So if from date one through day 15, all they're doing is having a good time, that might be a problem. It may not, because they'll find out if they get married if their adults are aligned. So I would say probably the majority of people who are dating, they're not having, you know, they're not having a fun date every single day.
You have to bring in the adult.
Absolutely. You must bring in the adult, yeah.
So could you talk about what the adult is, what's the child?
In the dating process?
I mean, over there people could understand.
What did you say? You know,
That's the beginning. That's where they started. Everything was great. They didn't have to talk about paying bills. And then a few years later, they look back and they're like, where are we? Like, we can't talk to each other.
So your question is, what happens between dating and marriage?
Or to understand, you know, when you have to bring, when the child is there, when you have to bring in the adult, or vice versa.
In marriage, or you're talking about in the dating process? Both?
Yeah.
So let's talk about marriage and we'll get back to the dating. So anything that requires an adult, perspective, you have to be in your adult. So if you're talking about money, obviously it's got to be the adult, right? If you're talking about parenting, it's got to be the adult, because the kids don't know about, if the kids know about parenting, so then, they would tell us what to do, right? The adult part of the brain is the part that needs to be communicating with your spouse about all the adult issues, parenting, house responsibilities, finances, in-laws, anything that requires logic, seichel, and there's real decision-making, clear-headed, logical thinking in the adult. Now, there's other parts of marriage where you don't want to have the adult. If you go on a date night and you have a poker face, that's not fun. Intimacy, you don't want to be all serious, rigid adult. If you're playing a game together, you don't want to be, you don't want to be all serious. It's not fun. So when you want to have fun, when you want to enjoy hanging out together, then you're going to want to, then you don't have to think about it so much. It happens spontaneously, right? You're not like hitting mukha to mizuba to go into my shop. Nobody does that. That would be a very adult thing to do. Very annoying adult thing to do. But yeah, anything that's
serious. A lot of people have to learn that. A lot of people, you know, number one, a lot of people believe that marriage, who said marriage is fun? That's number one. Who said it has to be fun? We have a mission. We got to be rigid. And to learn how to do that, they might have to make that Hindu Mechon Zaman. Spend 2 hours having a good time.
Sounds like Goyish Zachem.
I mean, the opinion that marriage is not supposed to be enjoyable, is that what you're saying?
So, yeah.
So for a lot of people, it's not enjoyable, but that's not because they're doing their purpose. It's because they're fighting too much, right? I mean, there's a lot of makaris that it's supposed to be enjoyable, but forget about makaris. Like, nobody wants to live miserably, right? Who wants to live miserable the whole life? And if you're all child, you're going to be miserable because you're fighting all the time and you're not getting your needs met. If you're all adult, it's very, There's no way to sustain being an adult all day long, right? If you're just thinking about your mission, your goals, your values, it's a very important piece. It's got to be the leader of your life, but it can't be the only part of your life, because then life is very unenjoyable. Everything that we enjoy about life is coming from the child part of us. Now, we might be motivated by bigger picture things, but the feelings and the pleasure and enjoyment things is coming from the child side most of the time. There are adult pleasures, but yeah, life would be pretty boring if you didn't have the child. Now, in the old days, like what happened in American society sort of went the opposite extreme, right? The old days was like, tough it up. Do what you got to do. You stay married and that's it. But they weren't happy. They were miserable. What happened is we went to the other extreme, that it's only about the child. The old generation, it was only about the adult. Adult, do what you got to do, work hard. And they stayed together, but they couldn't stand each other. Right? Now, they only want to like each other, and that's the only component of marriage. You gotta have both. If you have both, it works great. Now, I don't think there's any, I've never heard anything that there's a terash gafa that you're not supposed to enjoy your marriage. I never heard such a thing. I've definitely seen a lot of, to me it's sort of push it, that there's a lot of makaris that it's supposed to be pleasurable. There's also a lot of pain. That's sort of the point. But the pain is within the context of the values, is makes it a lot more tolerable. And also makes the pleasure more enjoyable.
Okay, let's jump into the next question over here. Somebody writes that when they were dating their husband, they really had a great time with them, but once they got married and he started his responsibilities, he became more serious and everything, but she really misses that childlike side of him. She doesn't see him much. He's very logical, he's very structured, he's very routine. He's a big Talmid Chacham, he's a breadwinner, but he lost his whole not the way she writes it, but he lost his whole, like, fun part of him when he was younger, as he's, you know, as life is getting older. She wants to know how to tune back into that, that he should tune back into that.
So again, I got, you know, without knowing all the details, I can't really give a clear picture, but that happens a lot when, you know, there's a lot of responsibilities, there's kids and there's stuff happening, and then the couple just grows apart.
I just want to clarify, to make sure everybody's listening. So we're talking about the adult part is the responsible, serious one who takes care of all the serious tasks, and the child part is the one that's having fun, going out to chasanas. It's not that they're a child, they're just living more exciting. So that we're just using, so people, I don't want people to get mixed up between child and adult, meaning like an actual child and actual adult. So the question is really, the husband became super serious, it needs to be more fun and young. What happened to that? She misses, that's what she was attracted to when she married him. So how does she get him to spark back into that?
Right. So again, I don't know all the details, but what happens is if he had a child part, and no one should date him, he was fun loving, he was geschmack. So the stuff in life happens, right? There's kids and there's bills and there's stressors. There's a lot of different factors. It could be stress management, it could be other things. But the big piece is none of this really is going to make the marriage, to make the marriage enjoyable. That is itself a separate effort. So there has to be time set aside. So go on a date night. Go on a vacation. To bring it out, there has to be the right setting. If the husband, what do you say, is the tomahawk, is Rosh Hashiva or something? If you're always in a setting where he has to do adult tasks, so then it's not going to come out. But if the wife wants it to change, if that's the only issue, there may be other things, but there's all the stressors, all the things that need to be done. The adult side is the only one that has the opportunity to come out. So if you put a set time in, when you put a concerted effort into focusing on ways to bring out the child part, the way they did when they were dating. So then that might work.
So I heard it was 1 point, or there was 4 points. I heard 1 point about explaining the child in the adult and the adult in the child. What was the next point?
Say, I you blocked out for a second.
There was 4 points that you were coming to make, right? So far, I heard one.
So there's just the concept of adult and child. There's a marriage that's based in child only. Then there's the adult perspective on marriage, the front perspective, right? So, and how that looks different from the non-adult perspective of marriage. And then application. Those are the four, I guess, that's not four set points, but four segments of the concept. It's parts and Jewish perspective and how that goes together.
Would you say that while we're talking about these two parts, there are people who need to do a lot of healing? Talking about, we discussed before, the triggers, to connect to that child, to the, you know, inner self, that fun, having a good time. Some people are cut, you know, shut down for a reason. Based on who knows what, you know?
Yeah.
So what do you do about that when someone shows up in the office and starts talking about their life and they're missing that fun part?
So obviously there's depends really on the context, but there's a lot of reasons why someone's child parts can be shut down. A lot of times, it's not that they don't have the fun side of the child part. It's more that there's a lot of triggering going on in the marriage. So there's an opportunity for the fun side to come out. Because if the only side of the child that has an opportunity in marriage to come out is the, you know, the impulsive, angry, hurt side, then nobody wants to have fun when they're in that state all the time. So that's very often what happens. But there's definitely people who have the child side shut down, that's depending on what, you know, on the circumstances, a lot of times trauma can do that. And part of the work is to help the person find that, but also to allow themselves to access it. There's a reason why it was shut down. I don't want to get too deep into trauma work, but there's a reason why that part of them is shut down. It wasn't either acceptable, safe, whatever, in their childhood for that part of them to be revealed. It would have been, depending, you know, it could have been abused. As if they just happy-go-lucky, they can punched in the nose. You have to make sure you're on your game. You got to do what you're supposed to do. It's not okay to be happy, right? So there's a lot that goes into it. There's uncovering the parts that are blocking the happy side, the enjoyable, fun side of the child. But I would say more of the time, that's not the issue. More of the time, it's that there's so much pain that they're not having, you know, a lot of these people, a lot of people who are coming, they can have fun with other, they can have fun with their friends. But in the marriage, that side is not coming up because there's so much pain, there's so much triggers, there's so much negativity because of the child parts.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the bigger problem. Now, I'm not saying what you're saying is not common, but I'm just saying in regard to marriage.
No, I hear what you're saying. If he could have if he's having a lot of fun at work and he's in different areas in his life, he has that part. When he walks home, he loses it. Obviously, it's a marriage issue that he feels over there. He can't bring it out. And that brings us to, what we discussed even last week, discussing for men to be vulnerable. And it's harder for a male to, bring out that childlike part and have a good time. And many times it could be they tried once or twice and, where the shame comes up or whatever it is that they decide, never again.
Essentially, you're mixing vulnerability into the fun. Well, there's two sides to that. There's definitely people who have a hard time having fun. Vulnerability is more, at least what I see is more about showing feelings. So being tough, being guarded, not showing emotion, not showing caring. That's not a lack of fun as much as it's a guardedness from showing that you have softer, more, that you feel hurt. Because the man's not going to want to, that's a very common male trait in general. And that will bother the wife a lot, right? But there's another thing. There are two separate things. I would say vulnerability is more about showing more vulnerable emotions, showing that you're hurt, showing that you care, showing. But then there's fun that could be related to vulnerability, but it's very often a separate thing. It's not a fear of vulnerability and having fun. It's either you don't know how to have fun, or it's there's so much negativity, so you're not going to allow that side to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Deep stuff.
I have some live questions, okay? Okay, I'm here.
What?
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. How are you? You hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Thank you so much. So if I understand correctly, there's a trigger which puts somebody into child. So you're speaking to spouse and then all of a sudden, whatever you said or however this came across, all of a sudden they're a child and the conversation is done for whatever, just because you're talking to a child and you're not speaking to your spouse anymore. My question is, I assume, and you didn't move to the application, the fourth part of this yet, practically from what I understand is, well, we have to talk about the healing around this goes like, well, let's try to stay away from triggers as much as possible for, a husband and wife. We want to love each other and care about each other and not on purpose, at least trigger each other there. And then the other part is to, do our own work on how we react to triggers. So if a child is triggered, then we tell them, I understand you're upset, but just because you're upset, you can't, spill juice on your brother's head, right? So just because you're upset about the conversation, we expect our spouse to, even though they are triggered, to somewhat stay adult. So, I mean, that's, I guess, the ideal. I don't know if that's possible. I don't have the certification to know that. First of all, maybe just clarify that point. Is it possible to stay adult once triggered? And, I hope it is. That's an expectation we ask our kids. Just because you're upset, don't hit your brother. You're allowed to be upset. So is there a chance where we could trigger a spouse and the conversation could possibly continue? And the first question is, as a spouse, do I have to dance around triggers, or could we say, hey, I'm going to act like an adult, and if you get triggered, it's on you to work on it? So what, maybe to clarify the question, what percentage of healing should be focused on dancing around somebody else's triggers, and that shouldn't come across in a mean way. It's not like I don't love my spouse and I don't want to protect them from triggers, but it's real world question. And then what percentage of the responsibility of healing lays on the person who's turning into a child and saying, hey, sir, I'm sorry that you're triggered, but I'm your wife. I'm not, you know, you still get more oranges on my head or whatever the equivalent would be of you know, a spouse turning into a child.
Very, yeah, there's a lot of points there. All very good questions. So let's go through a few of them. And, you know, just if I miss one of them, just ask again. So whose responsibility is it to deal with triggers? So if the person who has the triggers has an adult part of the brain, then it's their responsibility to deal with the triggers, right? Now, we all get triggered, so that doesn't mean that the spouse is not going to have some understanding and compassion when it happens, especially if the person has a hard time if they have a hard background or if they have, you know, just a lot of anxiety or whatever the issue is. But ultimately, the responsibility has to be with the person who's having the trigger, not the spouse, because it's their brain. They're the only one to fix it, right? So at least the work that I do is very focused on the person owning themselves, healing themselves, owning themselves. That doesn't mean that their spouse is perfect, but you have no control over what your spouse does. You only have control over yourself. So controlling yourself and working through your own things won't guarantee that your spouse does what you want, but it's the only thing you could do. So I know there's other models that think otherwise, but the model that I use is very much the responsibility of the person who has the trigger to deal with their trigger. Again, that doesn't mean that the spouse is not having the rahmanis and compassion and understanding. It doesn't mean that they get punished like you would punish a kid. It could be understanding, especially if the person's working on it, but the responsibility ultimately has to be with the person who has the trigger. That's one. There's a few other points. What could be the expectations? So, right. So again, the circumstance is going to be very different depending on what happened. But when you tell a kid, you can't do this when you're triggered, what you're saying is the thing that's appropriate to tell the kid is you can't punch your sibling in the nose. It doesn't mean you can't be angry. Now, if you're angry, you may not be able to go over to your sibling and give him a hug, right? Because that's just the biology of what trigger is. So just because you expect your spouse to behave themselves, to be appropriate, right? They're not ranting and raving, yelling and screaming, doesn't mean that they can have the conversation, depending on what the conversation is. If you want them to have an adult conversation, you have to make an allowance for biology. If at that moment they're very triggered, their brain is not functioning. Now you could say, I get your brains are functioning, but you can't yell and scream. You can't rave. You can't insult. You can't make faces, because there's a very big difference between controlling your feelings and your thoughts and controlling your behaviors. Behavior can always be controlled, and that's a very reasonable expectation. It's not, no one's going to be perfect. You know, you make allowances for when the person's working on it. But that's a reasonable expectation to make from a kid. It's not reasonable to tell the kid what he's thinking, and he shouldn't feel angry because he has no control over that.
So I understand that. So just to clarify, like just to paraphrase and just make sure I understand correctly, I could expect from a spouse to say, hey, I can't have this conversation now. I'm triggered. Or maybe, I mean, obviously in the ideal world, he would realize he's triggered and he can't have it, but I would say, hey.
Okay, usually it's the other spouse who,
right. That's what I'm saying.
And then the other one says like, I'm calm. I'm calm.
I'm not triggered.
I'm not triggered. Yeah.
So, you know, ideally we would say, you know, okay, obviously this conversation is not a good time for this conversation. You're not calm. You're not, you know, it's not a rational conversation. Now, the expectation of, you know, the spouse who's, you know, adult who's still adult before they lose their cool is to walk away from the conversation. And just the expectation is, hey, as long as they didn't behave on their trigger, I should give them their time to cool off. Like, let him go into his man cave, let him have his time to cool off and try again. There isn't an expectation, and I understand that. I'm not questioning it, that there is like, oh, hey, I could be triggered, but I continue the conversation, which means continuing the conversation would be the equivalent of hugging your brother, even though you're angry at him.
It depends on what the conversation is, right? If the conversation is budgeting, or the conversation is where are you going for Yom Tov, those things that require an adult part of the brain, it's unreasonable to ask the kid to do it then. But to ask the spouse to do it then. Right. If it's like,
well, if the spouse is the kid, it's the same.
So ideally, each person's going to be learn how to resolve that, how to calm down that part of the brain and return back, you know, immediately back to normal. But it's not reasonable to expect within the triggered state that they're going to sit and have a BE in conversation on something, you know, on a heavy topic.
Okay, I'm just going to take the liberty to ask you the one more specific question while I have the mic, but you could, I don't know if you could answer this without more information. What would be a healthy turnaround time to coming back from a trigger? And I obviously depends on the triggers and depends on a thousand other factors, but at what point would you say like, whoa, that's like, no matter what, you don't need 7 years to calm down. You know what I mean, like, where would that number be for you?
Well, there is no, there's definitely no set time, but there's a lot of tools that it's a very good question because it's a little bit complex.
I think as a woman coming to a man who needs a man cave, like where, what is normal? Or what is, right. Or what is still within reason?
Well, so when do you need therapy?
Yeah. So there's really two, there's 2 points here, right? When someone gets triggered, that means that somebody said something and it set off a certain, turned off the prefrontal cortex. It turned off the adult part of the brain, and now they're in the child part. Now, there's tools that can restore that, right? There's many different techniques that can bring the adult back. But even if not, that doesn't last forever. What happens, the reason why people stay in the state is because based on their history or the personality type of many, many factors, they're chewing it over again and again. They're so bothered, they're insulted, they're hurt, so they're staying in that state. They're in their mind reviewing it. You can get triggered. You can trigger yourself from morning till night if you would like to, right? You don't need anybody to help you out. You can just sit and think about one thing. Whatever you think about that, it sets you off. And it has the exact same effect as if you were with the person. That's what actually trauma is in a nutshell. I mean, it's a lot more complex than that. But not that you're triggering yourself, but something from the past is wired into the brain and consistently sending off danger signals without somebody doing it, right? So when somebody's, like you said, your drastic example, somebody's stuck 7 years because of that one thing, that's not triggering. That's a separate issue. Triggering is a very quick, sharp thing that happens. Boom, sets off, and then it settles. But then it continues, right? When that continues, that's not the triggering cycle. It's the person's other issues that are making them get stuck in it. Or it could be because there's a lot in them. I shouldn't say the person's issues. There's a lot of factors why they can happen. Maybe it's the dynamic in the marriage. They're very hurt by this, what their spouse said to them, and they always do that, and it's very hurtful. There's many factors, but the point is that's not trigger. Trigger is in the moment, and then it's done. It could be 10 minutes, 15 minutes, if it's just the trigger. And it doesn't have to be that long. If you have the right tools, you could, in a minute, you can bring yourself back to being, you know, 2 minutes, whatever, depending on the person. Again, also really depends on...
If it's something that lasts longer, there's more to the picture than just child-adult triggering.
It is child and adult, but it's more than just a trigger. No, there's a reason why that the child part is, why the person is getting stuck in their child part. Yes.
Okay. Right.
And it's not just that trigger. Yeah. It's not necessarily all their history. You know, there's a lot of factors. What happens in the marriage is very relevant to why the person will get stuck. It's over the same things, right? The same type of dynamic, the same type of issues that come up that will set each person into their, the habit of whatever they do when they're upset.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot of questions coming in. Okay. Let's get to these questions here. A second. Hi, how are you?
Hi, it's me?
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm extremely anxious. I'm nervous asking the question, like, on air. Really, like, stage fright. So, I have questions and some questions and comments combined on the area of addiction in a spouse. So the first question is, I want to hear your take. You know, I have my own experience. How could a person who's so messed up still be in denial, like for many, many, many years? Also, like, is it different when the addiction is not a clear-cut addiction? It's like you don't fit into neatly to a specific category, but it's like behaving like an addict. And, you know, for example, like the way one handles money, like, you know, like he's not a gambler. He doesn't go to a casino, but his way of handling money and doing business is like, again, like with a gambling brain. So I just want to hear if it's different than like if you do neatly fit into a category of addiction. And then.
I'm sorry. Could you clarify? You want to know if what, if certain behavior fits into addiction? Hello?
Should I ask one question at a time?
Yeah.
Okay. So how can a person be so messed up in like, in others' eyes, in so much pain and still be in denial and claim that they're not in pain? And, they're okay, and they're not suffering, and they clearly are so messed up.
They're clearly suffering, or they're clearly messed up, because one is about how they experience it, and one is how you experience them.
So, perhaps there are different natures, different personalities. Like some natures are more introspective. Maybe they are going to be very suffering if they're all messed up. Maybe some people can afford to live in denial, and maybe they're not suffering as much as I think they would be suffering. But they're so messed up for so many years and still in denial that everything's okay.
So yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of pain on from both sides.
Yeah.
Again, without knowing the details, it's hard to know what's going on, but the more, if somebody has we all have denial on some level, right? Everybody has some level of denial. It's a very, basic defense mechanism that's built into us, and it's a healthy one, actually. Because if we didn't have denial, then everything that ever happened to us, we'd be thinking about it all the time. The problem is when it takes over and it's excessive and we can't see ourselves honestly. So there's a reason why the denial is there. Because it's whatever's happening underneath is too much to cope with. But the more somebody tells them how much pain they have, actually the stronger their coping mechanism is going to be. Because they have to fight, you know, the more they have to fight to cover the pain, the stronger the fight is going to, the stronger the cover is going to be. So that happens with everybody. You mentioned addiction. That happens a lot in addiction. That's part of the addiction process. Now, you know, we're not talking about your specific details because I wouldn't need to know more. But in general, denial is a very big part of addiction because if the person didn't have denial, they wouldn't be in addiction. They're destroying their life. So denial is very much a part of the addictive process, but everybody has denial. So the more you try to show someone that they're in denial, the more denial that you're going to get.
So how do we deal with that child part?
So, like, I would say there's no friction at this point because one party is very, very accepting, but it doesn't take away the pain. Like, there's harmony because you're accepting of this part. There's no anger anymore. But there's still a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Seeing a close person so messed up, it messes you up. You know, your equilibrium, of course.
So that's a big point of a focus that I wanted to focus on today, that there's a lot of suffering and a lot of people in marriages are in a lot of pain. It's very painful when it's painful in any way, but when there is a bigger picture, it gives context to it. So if the goal of the marriage is only happiness, so then the pain is going to be compounded because then you're not getting, the whole point is just that you're having fun and enjoying each other and you're not. Now there's going to be pain regardless, But when there's a bigger picture, you're raising a family, you're giving over whatever your idea, your values are, and you're working on yourself, which sounds like you are very much, right? So when those things help the pain, they don't get rid of it, can't get rid of it, but the pain itself is part of the tafkid, right? It doesn't make it easy to deal with, but it does give it a meaning, which alleviates it a lot. Now, obviously, there's other ways of psychological ways of healing, you know, of working through pain. The from perspective is definitely a psychological thing, but you don't need to go to a therapist to have that perspective. It takes work. It's hard, but that helps, give context to the pain. It makes it a lot more tolerable.
Okay. Let's go to the next question. Put on mute. Okay. Hi. How are you?
Hi. So I have two questions. One, I want to know, I'm doing this for a while already and I'm aware most of the time of all my parts, but why when a trigger comes, I just react as with my child part. And then I have such charuta like 2 minutes later, mom's 2 minutes. And then I would say, sorry, sorry, but it keeps on happening. And it really irks me because I know it already and it's in me and I'm conscious about it, but I still, when the trigger comes, where is this adult to just behave? This is one question. My second question is about parents that usually act with their child. If I'm supposed to feed their toxic behavior or how to deal with it.
So the first question, again, I need more detail, but the goal when you're triggered, it sounds like you're actually doing a very good job from what you're describing because you're becoming aware, which is the first step. Also, the goal is not to be an adult. That's a very important point. When you get triggered, the point is not, okay, let me be an adult. You can't. Your goal is to resolve the trigger. Your goal is to learn how to calm down. Like we said, go to your room and smash the windows, right?
To deal with the parts, right?
So, yes, but it doesn't need to be a whole, it doesn't need to be so deep. No, I'm not talking about therapy.
This is new for me.
What are you doing therapy? What?
It's new for me that, I did think that a child is more of a negative thing. Not that I want to get rid of my child, but to accept it. But I did think that it's more of a, like, we don't want to act like a child. We always want to be an adulthood, right? And acting like an adult. Isn't it that?
No, so I'm actually using a different model, TIST, trauma-informed stabilization treatment. But the goal, I don't think in IFS either, the goal is not to always be what they call an IFS the self. The goal is that you're led by the self. No, who's driving the car?
Right.
Just because you're driving doesn't mean you kick out the kids in the back seat, leave them on the side of the road, right?
Of course not.
So it just means who's driving. So when,
right, so let's say a bitch fart, comes in just for a few minutes. And I love my bitch fart because it's really here to protect me, right? But I don't want to be a bitch. So here comes this very, I want to accept it, but then I don't want to be a bitch. So you get me?
So you're coming from an IFS perspective.
So don't use IFS. Let's say just that I'm reacting with a trigger.
The goal in the moment is not to accept. That's not the goal. The goal in the moment is your marriage. So in the moment, if you notice you're triggered, you're going to be mindful of what you say and do because you know that it's not going to be very reliable, right? The goal is not acceptance. That's what you do afterwards.
Of course.
Or
right.
You feel guilty, you feel ashamed, then you feel conflicted and you feel like,
right?
But in the moment, your goal is to preserve your marriage. So,
right. So it's enough. I was a bitch already. So what now? 2 minutes. 2 minutes,
so
a bitch.
Later,
and then.
Right. So then you accept yourself. All right. We make mistakes. We're all human.
No, but it keeps on happening.
So I don't know all the details.
What should you do next time?
So there's many techniques. I don't know what techniques you've been using. There's a lot of techniques that are very helpful. The first thing that is, it's not even so much a technique. The first thing is notice that you're triggered. right? It's not enough to know afterwards. You have to know in the moment when you trigger. Now, how do you know in the moment when you triggered? Most people, I would say most of my clients, they don't know. Their spouse knows they're triggered, and they know when their spouse is triggered, right? But if you don't know if you're triggered, then you're not gonna, then you're going to keep having the same problem again and again, which is what you're saying. So you know when you're triggered, there's a few signs. One of them is you're talking fast. Boom, right? Why you do that? If you're talking fast, you're triggered. If you're talking, very loud, we're not going to say yelling because no one ever says that they're yelling, but we're saying, we'll say loud. If you're talking loud, very loud, you're probably triggered. If you're making faces, you're probably triggered. So those are cues, right? If you can notice when you're triggered, then your job is not to accept yourself. Your job is not to act like an adult. Your job is to make sure that you do what needs to be done in that moment. So if it's an important conversation, you can say, you know, I'm triggered. Give me a couple minutes. I'll be right back. You go do your technique, smash the windows, whatever it is, and then you come back. But the goal is not to be an adult in that moment. The goal is to resolve the trigger. The goal is also not to accept. Is that answer your question?
I'll mute.
Okay, so it's great what you answered me, but let me, I'm not always a bitch, just for the people that listen. I'm a good wife, but just for the too many times that triggers come in, I want to stop it. That's it.
Right. So again, there's no way I can talk to your specific situation without knowing all the details. What I'm saying is
what you're saying, Chaim, the goal is to recognize it and try to calm yourself down. You could do the work in deep therapy, IFS, EMDR, all these other modalities to help yourself.
Even at home. It's not, yeah, there's a lot of things you could do at home, but
the goal is not to fix yourself when it happens.
If someone's in therapy, the goal in the moment is not you're not going to process. That's not the goal. The goal is very behavioral. Behave yourself, for lack of a better, right? Just make sure for your own sake, because you want to preserve the relationship. So now and behaving means you can do what you need to calm yourself, to be there for yourself, so that you can then return to the conversation.
Let's go to our second question.
Can I go? What? What was the second question?
The question is when you have parents that act like children and they act like 2 years old, like how do you deal with that? You're supposed to, again, it's a little more complicated. It's not a spouse. It's kibud av aim involved. There's a lot of different things. Like how do you deal with that here? Parents acting like children.
So yeah, it's definitely a very complicated question, also a very, very common issue that comes up. But it's gonna be the same principles. Without getting into the details, you're gonna have to be the adult because it's one thing to ask it from your spouse, but once you're married and you're out of the house, you're not getting your parents or your in-laws to be an adult. If they haven't figured out that it's not working the way it's working, that usually leads to much greater conflict. The goal for you is that you maintain your adulthood, in that relationship. Sometimes it's unpleasant. Boundaries are not fun. Nobody likes to put up boundaries, but you do need to put up boundaries. The parents will be upset. They'll be upset. Sometimes not. Sometimes you do cater to it, right? Because whether it's supposed to keep the aim, you want to preserve the relationship, but there's no way to really answer what to do without having all the details. But the point is, it's going to be the same principles, that the only way for that to work is going to be if you make sure that you stay in your adult.
But it's not contradicting with the Torah, this boundaries and everything?
So again, without knowing all the details, it's impossible to answer. Boundaries by just the concept of boundaries is not against the Torah. There definitely can be boundaries that are, so that's where, the details are very relevant. You're going to have to speak to your own Rav about the specifics of the boundaries. The concept of boundaries by itself is not antiterror at all, no. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the person right before, okay? Because I want to say, there's one other point that I wanted to mention. There's a vart that is a really nice var. It's very relevant. I think it's very important for everybody, especially if somebody has a lot of pain in marriage. So by a chasno, we have the badekin, right? By the badekin, you cover the face. And then by the chuppah, you uncover it. And why do we do that? So you uncover the face because Yaakov Avinu got tricked by Lavan and married Leah, right? So we uncover the face to make sure that the woman that you're marrying is actually the right one, and it wasn't just like it's a minute, because, you know, because that's what happened to the Akavinus. So we're making sure that it's actually the right one under the veil. The question is, why are you covering it in the first place? Just leave it uncovered, right? You don't have to cover it and then uncover it when you get to the chuppah. So I heard from Rabbi Aaron. Actually, you know what I'm talking about. I've been telling you all his bars for a long time. But the reason why is because every person that you marry, man and woman, there's a Rachel and a Leah. The Rachel is the one you dated and the one that you like and that you're excited about and the one that you think that you're getting. But there's also a Leah. Every spouse, both a man and a woman. It's not, I mean, we only have the, you know, Rachel and Leah for the woman, but it goes, you call it Yaakov and Esav, whatever you can, for the man. But the point is, it's a parts of art, because the woman that you're marrying and the man that you're marrying has many parts. The ones that you know and the ones that you don't know, and you're gonna find out when you get married, and you're not gonna like those parts. But we're covering it because that's what marriage is. It's not supposed to be perfect. It's supposed to have pain, and you're supposed to work through it, and your Bashar very often is working through the Leah in the other, in your spouse. And, you know, most of the Shvatim came from Leah, not from Rachel. So it's a very important, it gives a lot of chizuk to people because it's not a glitch. Pain in marriage is not like a, you know, you got the raw end of the stick. It happens. Everybody has it. And it's actually part of the process. It's meant to be that way. It's built into it. It's part of the system.
Okay, let's go to the next question. You're up.
Okay, so you're talking a little bit about, you know, the fun part and sort of tying it a lot to the child. And Coach Menachem was mentioning, you know, the dating, the fun, the excitement, and we're sort of allocating that to the child part of the brain. But what, as far as the adult side, if you want to be more, you know, focused on that, where's the true happiness that, or excitement that you'll have on the adult side of the marriage?
So happiness and excitement are a little bit different. Happiness is a very generic term that people use, but everybody means different things. So it depends. Like excitement depends what it's coming from. But excitement usually is coming from the limbic system. Limbic system is not the adult part of the brain. That doesn't mean that the adult can't be excited. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's say someone finished us, right? They're very excited about it. Now they're excited about an adult accomplishment. So the limbic system is sort of synced. The child part of the brain, or the emotions that are originating in the child part of the brain, is synced with the adult. It's coming because it's for an adult goal, but it's originating in the child part of the brain. Now, you said, so that's excitement. Excitement is limbic system emotion. Excitement is very similar to anxiety, actually. And anxiety also is limbic system. So it's originating in the limbic system. So your question is, how do you achieve excitement, or is that the child or adult? What's the question?
No, the question is, what should be, if you want to look at, let's say, the ideal marriage, what should be the ideal sources of happiness? Is it just the date night where you're bringing, like, you know, everyone's saying that's your child side, where you're bringing out the dating, having fun again, which I think we're all agreeing is maybe the more childish side of the child side of the brain, if you will. But what should be, as a mature adult, what should be the focus? And we're... is true tyridic, if you will, of happiness in a marriage?
Good question. I had a quote the other day. I want to see if I can find it, but giving, right? So people want to feel loved and feel connected, but when you give it to someone else, that gives a lot of happiness to people. Think, like, I'm saying everybody can relate to it, whether you do it for a spouse or for a kid. But when you do something without, not because you expect that you're going to get something back, you do something just because you want to do something nice, it feels really, really good. So if you're talking about the adult happiness in marriage, it comes from being able to love someone else, do something for someone else, care about someone else. To do that, you got to make sure that you know how to manage the system. keep the kid in the back and the adult in the front. Because if you don't, the kid is only focused on what he wants or she wants. But if you're able to work with that child part of the brain, so then the adult pleasure comes from actually the opposite, making someone else happy, being supportive of someone else, loving someone else, being there for someone else.
Or the accomplishment you mentioned before. Accomplishment is the adult making a decision to finish shas. And when he does that, it's synced together with the excitement. Yeah. So is, what we're looking for is the balance to be able to have both parts, you know, in the right place.
Exactly. So he was asking more about what is the, there's many pleasures. There's the, let's say the date night happiness, but then what's the adult satisfaction or joy in the marriage? Not the, the child part will be like, yeah, we played a board game together. We had fun together, right?
Okay, so basically, let's a little bit do chazar to share what we're holding over here. So basically, we started off that we understand the concept that there's a child in the middle of us and there's an adult, right? That's the part we're focusing on tonight. And we're trying to understand that when we have these issues in marriage and communication, sometimes we see that child part coming out in ourselves, and sometimes we see it coming out in our spouse. You said ultimately the responsibility lays on the person who has the trigger. It's not the person has to dance around the person's trigger, right? We have to
Right.
To it. So the mice, if somebody does have a trigger, right, obviously the bigot, like this lady was on, at least acknowledges it, which is like probably more than 50% of the cure to realize that you have it. But like, what would be like, I guess, if you see that your marriage is rough, what can a person do to self-analyze himself to realize maybe I am acting like a child, and maybe all my points I'm trying to make and all my tainas and she's wrong and he's right, and he did say, he didn't say. I want to say this story because I think it's very relevant. I had somebody by me a few weeks ago, whatever, they're having Shalom Bayis issues, and they're older people. So they were in their 50s. And I was just looking at them. I turned to them both in the middle of the conversation. I said, you guys are both acting like two-year-olds, like for real. They both looked at me and they one started laughing. I was like, he's like, you guys are arguing literally like two-year-olds. People are much older than me. Like they're really in the high 50s. And like they realized when I said it to them, like, yeah, they're really arguing over stupid things. So I guess my question is, the person who is in the marriage that they're having problems, or I guess any relationship, they're going to take it out of the marriage, what can they do for themselves to do self-introspection, to start seeing maybe there's a 1% possibility that you're not perfect, and maybe you have some type of trigger or inner wounded child, inner wounded part inside of you that's making it very difficult to deal with.
So it's actually a lot easier than you're making it sound. Because you don't have to do so much introspection. It's a very, very easy thing you got to do. Go to your spouse and ask them, what am I doing wrong? Your spouse will happily comply and give you a full sheer on exactly all the things. Now, you may not agree with it, but you're saying if someone actually wants to be open, then it's pretty easy to find out. Doesn't mean that the spouse is right, but it'll give you a pretty rough idea.
And just see how that feels. And then you'll be in touch with that child.
Well, no one likes to hear that. That doesn't necessarily mean you have a big problem.
I think what happens is when somebody, let's use the financial thing as a good example, right? The guy, let's just use it, they talk about money, and one likes to spend a lot, one doesn't. Anytime it comes to financial, somebody's having a blow up. Second, anytime it comes to money, you act like a child. The person will be like, because I like to enjoy my money, I like to spend it, you like to save every penny. So they go back into the logic, not that I have a trigger, it's because your shita is so wrong in this, I'm totally normal. That's part of the problem.
So that's not really true, because the reason why they're getting triggered is not because of difference of opinion. That's why there's the right setting for a trigger. But just because of difference of opinion doesn't mean, what would that person do at work if they disagree with their boss? They're not going to, right? There's a difference between having difference of opinion and a trigger. Just because you don't have on the same opinion doesn't mean that you have to go around to get raving. So you have this opinion and you deal with it as an adult. And everybody knows what it means to be an adult because they do it in all areas of their life, right?
Now, what about if somebody has a trigger and they realize they have a trigger? Would they be safe to tell it to their spouse? Is the right thing to tell it to your spouse? That, like, say, when it comes to money, I have a very difficult time because of A, B, and C, and it gets me feeling nervous and scared. Would that be a proper thing to be vulnerable to your spouse and tell them?
Why not? Like, I guess the question is, what's the downside? It depends on if the spouse is going to hit you with a bat. Maybe not, but, like, it's a pretty normal spouse.
And then the person's job is to be sensitive to it. But ultimately,
that's a question of the job. It's not a question of the... No, this other spouse doesn't have to dance on the trigger. It has to be addressed. Just because you have a trigger doesn't mean the issue doesn't be addressed, but it does help your spouse understand why this keeps happening. Like, why whenever I bring this up, do you go nuts? Right? So if they understand it, so then you can try to make the conversation in a way that works. The other spouse can be more careful. And their spouse is not going to be as bothered when randomly you go off the rails, right? Because like, oh, that's a trigger. Okay.
Yeah, but it could be used also like in a derogatory way. Oh, he's acting crazy again. Here we go. It could be weaponized.
Well, it could be weaponized, but is the guy acting nuts? Like, if he's acting nuts, she doesn't need to say I'm triggered. It's all over the place, right? Like, either he's acting nuts or he's not acting nuts. Saying that as a trigger is not going to really be the problem.
Does anybody listen to this program and they actually feel they have the trigger? Is the job to really work on it to try to figure out what's causing it and try to, like, what's really the avoida? Napashas maisa. I mean, what's the avoida? How do you really, you don't want to act like that, right? You don't want to be the guy in shul that the guy sits in your place and you blow up and start screaming. You know, I always use that as an example. Like, you see this guy who's totally normal and everything's great. And you see this guy just blow up for some silly reason and everybody laughs at him, right? But really, it's just this child that's, you know, something got triggered in there. Some wounded child is in pain. So Lamaisa, what is his job? How do you go about healing? What's the malach?
Right. So there's an important point that I want to clarify what you just said, because I think a lot of people who think of healing think, you know, I have a child part, I have wounds, I have things, and when I heal it, then I'm going to get better. But it does not need to be the way, and it usually doesn't work that way. There's the behavioral aspect, and then there's the emotional aspect. How you feel and how you act is what we're calling at least a part of child and adult. You don't need to resolve all your wounds to have a good marriage. Because if you say, like, until I don't feel hurt when you say this, I'm going to act nuts, it's lach harabah. Because you can go to therapy and work on your parts, but you're going to ruin your marriage in the meantime. You're going to burn it down. So even if you have a lot of wounds, you have a lot of triggers, you don't need to solve all those in order to solve a lot of the issues of marriage. Again, we're not talking about if there's abuse. We're talking about
tonight's focus is not on severe depression. Right. We're not talking about.
Everyday marital issues can be very intense.
Yeah, correct. No, for sure they're very intense. We're talking about issues that are very specific to triggers that people are.
Child parts, yeah.
The child parts. If somebody says 7 years of bed in the press, it's not a child part. It's not, they have problems. It's a different story over here. I'm talking about people that could communicate and have healthy relationships. But when it comes to specific things, it's like almost like you're dealing with somebody who's just not home. And it happens to everybody, right? Everybody has some part of them.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different techniques. We could do one here briefly. This, you know, especially for anger, there's different techniques for different things. I want to go back for a minute before we get to that can I go back to Aaron for a minute, Aaron Sunshine?
Sure.
Because there's a vart that I wanted to mention to him. So there's a famous vart, also I saw from Rabbi Aaron, but there's sort of like another knage. The word ish and isha, it's a famous vart, right? So ish has a yud, isha has a hay in it. If you take out the yud from the ish, you take out the hay from isha, you have ish, fire. If you have with the yud and with the hay, then you have the shem Hashem. So without the shem Hashem, you have fire. With the shem Hashem, then you have a marriage. I want to add one piece to that. What does it mean to have shem Hashem? Because it doesn't mean like you sit and learn chavos lavavos together. Maybe it means that too. You know, get stuck on, you know, Parak Shira, it doesn't mean that. It could mean that too. What it means, the yud and the hay are both within the ish and the isha. It's not separate, right? The yud is inside the word. The hay is inside the word isha. You're bringing, what it means to bring the shem Hashem, it means you bring out the shem Hashem of within the ish. So within each of us, we have qualities of ruchnius, of spirit, of the Rabbanu Shalom. Bringing out those is what it means to have ish v'isha without the fire. Doesn't mean that you do from kaizachin. It means you bring out the yud in the ish and the hay within you. So you bring out the selam kim within you, which is the yigil midas arachamim, What are the midas of Hashem? Rachel, Mechanan, right? Acceptance, compassion, forgiveness. These are all what it means to have the Shem Hashem. That's where we're talking, you know, about the adult joy in marriage.
Should we do a role play?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. You want me? You have a case, or you want me to come up with one?
Maybe come up with one. Do it with Uzi.
I'm always the child, so that's the way we do it. I'm always the one in pain.
Yeah, you want to come up with a story?
Anger? You're looking for anger?
Anger, yeah, anger is a good one because if you're anxious, like there's lots of techniques for lighter things. Anger is a hard one, right? You're not going to do breathing. If you're angry, you're not going to do some deep breathing. No one's doing deep breathing if they're angry. It's like the last thing in the world I was doing. You need something that's going to really get the anger out. You have to vent it. That's why we said smash the windows. That's not a good one. So there's techniques that can help get the anger out.
You'll be the wife. You won't tell me that your mother's coming for Yom Tov for the whole Pesach, including Shavuos afterwards, and I'll be the spouse.
Who's the angry? Well, you can be the angry one. I'm going to direct you what to do.
You be the wife. Tell me that your parents are coming for 12 days, right?
Or actually, my parents are coming for 6 months. Okay.
Okay, so I'm just letting you know now. This is not going to work. No, I can't. It's, what are you crazy? What do you have in the room? They make us crazy. They're gonna make you nuts. It's not gonna work. No way. No way.
Yeah, I've seen. That's not anger. Come on, get it going.
Absolutely not. I'm smiling, so it can't be that.
No, we need. It's gotta get a little. The flames gotta get.
Manachem has a lot of anger. Go, Manachem.
We don't need to really role play. I can really explain what you would do. Let's fast forward, right? So you're yelling and screaming.
You're yelling and screaming.
Your wife's yelling and screaming. Now you're both really mad at each other. So the technique is called mindfulness. Yes, it's called mindfulness. It's nothing to do with mindfulness, but it's a parts technique. Now, it's very simple to do. I'm trying to think how in depth we should go, but basically, you're gonna you know, like we said before, you're gonna end the conversation. So you're gonna get back. Then you're gonna go to another room, and you're gonna address whenever you trigger. There's three levels to the trigger. There's the thoughts, right? She's a mushkin. How dare she? She always has to get her way. She never listens to me. Blah, 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 blah. That's the thoughts. Then there's the emotion. Now they're all there at the same time, but the emotion is anger. That's at least what you're feeling. When you work through it, you'll see there's some other stuff going on there too. But that's level two. Then the third aspect is the body sensations. It could be, there's a lump in my throat. There's,
anger, your body shaking.
Well, right. So the shame is an emotion. I'm talking about physical. Shaking, right. Your body's shaking. Your muscles are tight. Your heart's racing. So what you do is you sit down and you just say each thought that you're having.
Say it?
Yeah. Well, one second. I'm going to tell you what you do. And then you're going to say the word yes afterwards. So you'll say, I'm not going to give in. Yes. She always does this. Yes. Why does she have to always go get her way? Yes. She knows I can't stand her parents. Yes. Right? You're going to do that. They'll do, let's say, 10 thoughts. And then you're going to go to your feelings. Now, even though your feelings are there all at the same time, but this is the way it's broken down. Go to your feelings, and then you say, I'm furious. Yes. I'm really angry. Yes. I'm enraged. Yes. I'm hurt. Yes. I feel ignored. Yes. I feel unheard. Yes. And then you're going to go to your body sensations. You're going to say, pit in my stomach. Yes. A pain in my back. Yes. A lump in my throat. Yes. Now you can do this. You can do, let's say 10. It doesn't matter exactly how much. You're going to do it, 10 of each. Now it's important that you don't stop when you do it. Look, if you run out of things to say, you say blank. Yes. Blank. Yes. You don't sit and think. The point is it has to be very spontaneous. And the reason is because what you're doing here, you're accessing all the feelings, thoughts, and emotions of the child side of the brain.
Kol halashon.
When you say yes, what you're doing is, it's basically the adult part of the brain hearing, listening, and acknowledging what the child's feeling. You don't have to think about this. You just say the word yes. And it really, really, really works very quick. And you do a few rounds before you realize you're automatically getting into the positive. Your thoughts are coming up, yeah, it's okay, not a big deal, or it's like, she'll give in. The point is, it has to be unfiltered, right? So you make sure the door is locked, no kids are listening, we don't want any, four-letter words or something similar that we had a few of those tonight. Those need to be said, but they can't, you know, it can't be filtered. If you're filtering, it's not gonna work. You gotta get it all out. But you do it fast, right? You're not just pausing. Thoughts, feelings, body sensations.
Well, interesting. Let's see if it really works.
It works, and it works very quick. You do this for 2-3 minutes, it's like you're completely back to yourself.
When you feel like you're being triggered and you feel super angry, you go into a room and you say 10 emotional things that are bothering you about it.
You're venting everything that's going through your mind.
And why are you doing emotional, logical? Why don't you just say whatever comes to your mind?
Because there's many levels to what's, because what you're doing here is not just making sure that you don't say the thing you don't want to your spouse. You're processing it. You want to resolve it. To resolve it, it needs to be addressed on every level that it exists. So it exists on the cognitive level, it exists on the emotional level, and it exists on the body level. Right? Everything that gets disrupted on that, on the child end is getting disrupted on all three levels. It needs to be addressed on all three levels.
I'm just wondering, somebody sent in a question before. What happens the other way? You know, there's many women that, you know, they're running the house or they're macho. And when their husband is a little bit, he wants to have a good time, brings out the child part, and they don't know how to eat that. They don't know how to see that. They're like, wait a second, you're the man in the house. I mean, they could have a hard time to connect to that child part in their husband.
Basically, the woman's coming all adult, she's getting rid of her child part.
Of the husband's. She's getting rid of the husband's child part.
But she got rid of hers a long time ago.
So I want to clarify what the question is. Is the question is that she can't accept that he has it, or are you pointing out that the roles can go in reverse?
It gets mixed. You know, she doesn't want to accept it. She doesn't want to see it in him. Doesn't like it. She doesn't know how to connect to it. And you know, what do you want?
So again, obviously that details are very relevant, but too much of the child part is not good. So you have to know what's going on. Is he acting like a child when it's time to be an adult? Is it that the wife has to learn how to tolerate his child part? Is it both? So it depends. It very much depends. It could be the wife's child part not being able to tolerate his child part. Because again, child parts, like we talked, are, it could be fun-loving, but it could also be critical, negative, angry, right? So it really depends on the context. It doesn't matter if it's the wife, it's the man or the woman. It's the same dynamic. Right. This part, so it's like two siblings fighting, right?
So what we're looking for is balance. What you're saying, we need the balance, and everybody, we both have both, you know, and to understand when do I need to bring the adult and when the child is being triggered, when it's okay to go out, have a good time with the child parts, you know. So
there's what is the balance? Yeah, I mean, I think, well, the problem is when we try to make it a little too
rigid.
To get it too right. We're not going to get it perfect. We're never going to be perfect. The point is to get the concept so that you can make some small improvements, right? Mm. But no, like if you just, when should I be a child? When should be, the basic rule is, try your best to be your adult when you're having adult conversations. You're trying to keep the triggered child in the back seat. That's the concept. Now, no one's going to do it perfectly. We're never, right? It's not, unless when we become halachim, we're never going to get triggered. We're always going to act the way we should. But that's the basic concept. To try to keep the adult in the driver's seat and the triggered kid in the back seat. And then the rest of the time, you could have both. It doesn't have to be a perfect balance. I think it's impossible to also because every person is different. Every couple is different. You figure out what works for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to the closing segment, and then we'll wrap it up. Chaim, I'll leave you to leave us with closing thoughts. First of all, I want to say, Chaim, for coming on tonight, giving a lot of chizik. I'm very happy we tackled this topic, a very small, important topic, but carries a lot of weight in it. And hopefully Hashem will get back into it and really definitely maybe another time or time. Tonight's share is 120. If anybody wants to hear this, if anyone wants to join the chat, please text us at 732-314-1710 and say my number. And I'll send you the link for the group chats. Also, you can go to MenachemBerkel.com and sign up for his weekly flyers every week with the speakers and the replays. Anybody's here the first time every Sunday night at 9:30 at this Zoom ID. We have different important topics from therapists, from our bottom. Next week we're going to have Yehuda Abikassis, who's dealing, he's a very funny guy. We'll be discussing comedy and therapeutic. He mixes therapy and comedy together. It's a very interesting concept. Again, it's just a concept. It's called Healing Through Humor, Therapy Meets Laughter, Improv Healing. Can comedy mixed with therapy help heal deep wounds and trauma? It should be something very interesting. Please join us. Let people know about it. Everything is recorded. My channel will be on MenachemBerkel.com. If anyone has any questions, please email coachmenachem@gmail.com. Everything is recorded. You can go watch us on MenachemBerkel.com and all YouTube and all the other podcasts. You can listen to them. I think we're everywhere, Menachem, right? Any podcast that exists. Again, if anybody wants to be in touch with Chaim Moshe Steinmetz, his website, Chaim Moshe Steinmetz, ChaimMosheSteinmetz.com. And if you want to be in touch with him, if you have any questions or anything, please feel free to reach out. Okay, thank you to all the advertising sponsors, like with Scoop, Ellie Nariel from Five Town Central, and Chaya Kaplan from JCN. I'll go first, Menachem, and then Chaim Moshe will end it. But, in closing, just want to say tonight, we feel this is a very important topic, me and Menachem, to understand different parts when we're living with people. Again, we're very focused on the child part, whether you can call it whatever you want, you can call it inner child, you can call it the immature part, you can call it the fun part, whatever you want to call it, but basically it's the part that's not the very, you know, straight shooter, very rational. It's the part that, I guess it's funny, I guess it's childish, but that part has a young part of in us that gets wounded and sensitive. That's why I mentioned the story that happened a few weeks ago by me. You can see somebody 50, 60, 70. It doesn't make a difference to age. When that part gets triggered or gets activated, let's use a different word than triggered because I feel I'm getting triggered from the word triggered already. That part gets activated. You see a lot of mature and actually embarrassing behavior. And I think that as adults, when people act like that, we try to rationalize why we're acting that way, because this person said this and this person did this and she said this and he said that. And we use all the logic because we're actually embarrassed from the behavior, because it's pretty embarrassing as an older adult to be upset when somebody says something to you or somebody does something to you. We're pretty rational people. So when we see that happens, we need to really focus on ourselves and try to really figure out what's causing that and try to work on that. Again, there's a lot of different therapies, a lot of different deep therapies you could do. But if we could get to a place where we don't get triggered so often or so much, you can lead more productive lives. For sure, have better marriages. Chaim, I have to just tell you, marriage is the one that brings out this inner child more than anything else. Like you could have successful in your work. You could be successful in everything else with your friends even. But marriage, certain things like you can't like run from this inner child. This is like where Hashem made it specifically for their growth. Specifically marriage and other, a few other things, but can't like run from it. So again, I feel tonight's point, that we should all take from it is to recognize it. And if we recognize it, try to deal with it and try to, I think also be sensitive to your spouse that has it. Try to be open with your spouse so that this is something that bothers you. And together could, you know, it's scary for a man to be vulnerable, but if you could be somewhat vulnerable and be honest, I think it helps the relationship. And then together you can work on it, and then you can reach a place where you could see the guy get upset and he could turn to his wife and say, yeah, I think I just got, you know, activated. And yeah, exactly. He's laughing because it's not even reality. But that would be the
main. No, my horror is on the word activated.
The word triggered. I'm just like, I heard so much of this word already. Not tonight, just in general. It's like, it's such a, like, Oyskishpilte word. Like, I'm getting sick of it already. So that's my word for tonight. And Coach Menachem, you triggered me.
So thank you. Thank you very much. And we heard a lot of good things tonight. Just a few ideas. And so like we heard the spiritual side, that where, you know, Hashem has a plan. We don't always understand it. And part of it is marriage. And that's what we do hear so many times. People have a hard time. And that's a physic itself to understand that that's part of it. Like you said, it's not a glitch. It's part of it. And now we have to try to figure it out. And how do we grow? How do we overcome? And what's the challenge? My idea, what I was thinking is that there are many people who have a hard time doing self-care, to take care of themselves. And that could be that's connecting with that child part that you don't know how to connect to. Because that's really what it needs. When you need your coffee or you like ice cream and you want to go for a walk, it's taking care of yourself. It's something that you need. It's a need that you know, but you want to say, no, I don't need it. I'm fine. I never get upset. No. Understand there's something inside of you. There's another side. And to connect to it, what does it need? Like you said, you listen to it. And what's important is we're not getting rid of it. We have it. And we need it. It's part of life. It's part of us. We're not getting rid of it. Understand how it works. And, you know, try to see which one is in the driver's seat. But it's there. Learn how to deal with it, how to be there with it. And forget about spouse, even for yourself. To have a productive life is to understand yourself, to understand what do you need, what, you know, your ticks, your ups and downs, how to deal with yourself. And, that's going to help you to connect with your spouse, to understand theirs, put yourself in their shoes. So, yeah, it's a very specific idea that we heard today, but it's really very, you know, negay in a lot of places. And it could be work, like we heard from many people, if it's something that you have ready for years, and many times it does need therapy to sit and understand, what should I do? It happened so many times. I know I'm doing it wrong, but what should I do? And reach out for help. So thank you very much for joining us tonight. And
thank you for having me.
It's a shame we should be able to take the concepts one step at a time.
Yeah, Chaim Moshe, no, leave us with a thought.
Yeah. Well, I want to just summarize, really, because we got a lot into the nitty gritty about the child, but that's not the only point that was important. So if I'm going to summarize a few things, one, everyone's got everybody, a lot of people who are struggling in a marriage think it's a glitch that we mentioned earlier. It's like they're the only one, but it's part of the design, and every couple has to work through things, and there's many, many couples that are struggling. But the point is that the perspective really makes a very big difference in tolerating it, working through it, and being happy in life. Because if you have the perspective, not just that it's meant to be that way, but also what's the purpose of the whole marriage thing. If you don't know why you're doing it, then you're going to get very bogged down by all the pain in it. But if you know why you're doing it, it's for your personal growth, it's to raise a family, it's to become more like Hashem. So that's from Yiddishkeit perspective, but it's also the adult. And that has to be the guiding light in the marriage. If you know why you're doing it, then you can withstand and work through a lot of things. If you don't know why you're doing it, and you don't have your eye on the prize, that's when you get bogged down by all the built-in inevitable struggles. So that's a very important point. The child and adult is not just about triggering, it's also about making sure that you have the adult capacity, but adult perspective. The adult perspective is a very, very important point for this. And the other point is that you're not missing out anything by developing this perspective. It's not a, push through, persevere, old school model. We talked about Viktor Frankl, but it's really, you know, if you check out Susan David, she's a big psychologist. A lot of the big psychology modalities have this built in. The way that you are happy is actually, it's paradoxical, because everybody's trying to be happy. The ones who are running after what they want and how they feel are trying to be happy, and they're miserable. And the people who are focused on the bigger picture are happy, because happiness, that was a very important point. Happiness is the result of having a guiding mission. You're trying to accomplish something more than you. The happiness is the side effect. That is the way to get happy. But when you try to get it directly, then you don't. That's it. That's sort of the summary. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming on.
Amazing.
Everybody have a great night. We'll see you next week with Yehuda Abikassis. We'll get a good laugh with him, hopefully. A little laughter and therapy. And have a wonderful week, everybody. Take care.
Yeah.
Right, take care.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.